Hey Pacers fans, this is Miles Turner, and you're listening to Pacers Sound.
Oladipo right edge on the drive, edge of the arc, step back for three. I told you he'd shoot it down the stretch. A three-ball Oladipo from the right edge.
And we welcome you back inside another Sideline Guys podcast. Alongside Jeremiah Johnson, I'm Pat Boylan. The last couple of weeks we've come to you have come off a couple of losses, and I really think where this podcast comes into, it's maybe the peak of the season. You could make a case for it, at least, in terms of games over 500. The Pacers are at 40 and 28. They're in the midst of, if you just look at it by a week's perspective, of what is almost assuredly their toughest week of the season. And Jeremiah, you, of course, have been out there for those last two games, most recently in Philadelphia, before that in Boston. This was a four-game stretch that, to me, if you would have said the Pacers go 1-3, I would have argued that that is plenty fine. This is the toughest stretch week that they're going to have all year. They have another four-game stretch that's difficult a little bit later in the year, but an extremely difficult four games that they have right now. They're two games the way through it, and they're already 2-0. They've already potentially exceeded expectations, and you've been there to witness it in person.
Pat, I'm not sure who you're saying it's difficult for. Difficult for the Pacers or for the teams to have to play the Pacers?
Very true. Very true.
I mean, it's almost to the point in the season right now where there are only 14 games left to play. And I feel like every qualifier, you know, mostly nationally about, you know, oh, well, the schedule's going to be harder. Oh, well, but this, or oh, well, by well, but that. What we have seen from this team is basically what they are. And they are a team that is resilient, that has a great deal of confidence in what they do and how they do it. They really enjoy being around each other, and they don't go into any game thinking that they cannot win. And I can, you know, so many times you think back to what you were thinking before the season, and I guess the way they've exceeded my expectations is that I was very confident they would play very hard every night. And I think for the most part, you know, in an 82-game season, you're going to have a couple games where you just don't have it. But there have not been too many games that they did not give it their best effort, but they have had as much talent, or at least, you know, showed that they are at least even with some of the best teams in the NBA, especially in the second half of the season, almost every single night. I mean, this team was at 500 the first game in January after that loss to Milwaukee, and I believe they are 21-10. Since then, I think it was the Pacers had won 21 of their last 30, and that did not take into account that Milwaukee game. That's just remarkable. And if you just look at the last four road wins, I mean, you would say if you take, don't even think about the home games that are mixed in there, but if you just say these four road games and you say at Milwaukee, at Washington, at Boston, and at Philadelphia, and these are four playoff teams that aren't fighting to get in that you pretty much say are solid playoff teams. You'd say, well, you know, you probably weren't favored to win any of them. You definitely weren't. And you'd probably be okay to win one. Two would be great. Three would be, you know, wow. And they've won all four. And yeah. So I think we're just to the point in the season where you can enjoy it if you're a Pacers fan. And if you cover the Pacers like we do, you can find, you know, great stories to tell, but I think we maybe should stop being surprised. That's the only thing that I keep coming back to is it's an easy question to ask someone that isn't close to the team, and those that aren't close to the team can ask the players. And last night after the postgame show, I went in the locker room, you know, just to kind of soak up a little of the atmosphere, because you just have to take every opportunity in some of these situations to just, you know, observe and to, you know, create some memories. And, you know, it's always good to have some perspective about a big win a week later or 2 weeks later, or when you go back, maybe the Pacers play the Sixers again in the playoffs, and you want to kind of remember everything that happened in that game. And so there was a big crowd around Miles Turner. And I don't know whether it was a national reporter or a local Philly-based reporter, but they were asking a line of questions to Miles, and it's something he's used to. But, you know, it's an honest question. It's an easy question. And the guy asked Boyan the same question after the game a couple weeks or a week ago or last week. Are you surprised this team is third in the East? And, you know, a player is probably not going to say, yeah, you know, I thought we would be awful, obviously. But, you know, the way Miles said it, you really believed him. He said, I believed it in training camp. I thought we'd be a top four seed. And even before camp, you know, I think he was like, we want to be a playoff team. I think he was on the jump, and some people sent me some links to what he said in the offseason. But once he saw it in training camp, he kind of thought this could be a top four team in the Eastern Conference. And everyone else believed that. And I don't know. It's just crazy how it's come together, because let's just randomly, Pat, pull, you know, the Knicks or maybe, you know, the Magic. I'm sure in training camp they were optimistic. They were, you know, happy. In the first week or two in the season, you know, the Magic were kind of taking the East by storm. But they couldn't sustain it, and injuries hurt the Knicks. But, like, this team just continues to improve, and it's credit to the players, credit to the coaching staff. But just what we've seen over the course of this season through 68 games, it's something we maybe should just start to expect, and that's, I think, the biggest compliment you could pay to that team.
I completely agree. I think it's really good perspective. You know, to be 40 and 28 right now, I think at the beginning of the year would have been beyond just about everybody's wildest dreams. But with the evidence that you've started to see pile up more and more, we're at game 68 right now. We're well past small sample size fluke territory. You talked a little bit about Miles. You know, he's the one guy, and I actually had a little bit of a back and forth with a couple people on Twitter yesterday, because there was somebody who was making the comment about how, you know, Miles fanboys are so, you know, tough to interact with because they will defend him for everything. And then when he plays well, they mention it. And I feel like I've had an opposite perspective all season long on Miles, because he's been inconsistent at times. And of course, you know, you see what his potential can be. And at times, maybe you're wondering if he's going to reach that. So I totally get it. But for me, like there's so many people who go, oh, look, the Pacers were so patient with Victor Oladipo. They said, you know, he's 24, he's still young, he's not at his peak, and that patience has paid off. And then they weren't having it for a 21-year-old, who still could be in college, by the way, if he wanted to. When Victor Oladipo was 21 years old, he was just leaving IU and had just got drafted. So I've always kind of preached perspective on Miles. And I'm going to do that here because it's only four games, and four games is nowhere near a big enough sample to start making strong conclusions. That said, he's passing the eye test, Jeremiah, in a way that he has not, I don't think, before, in terms of course, the Boston game. He finishes in the post to essentially win the game for Indiana. His numbers over the last four are 21-8. He's done that over a four-game stretch before. I think it's how he's doing it. Hitting clutch shots, scoring in the post, going one-on-one with Joel Embiid, maybe the best big in the game, going one-on-one and matching him, you know, blow for blow last night. And when he got, you know, the slightly smaller but a big Morris on him, he finished right through him. And I think, again, it's four games. I want to be cautiously optimistic with him. But from an eye test standpoint, you're there. Give me your opinion, because from watching and broadcasting the games through our studio, this seems to be, had the potential at least, to be really promising for what Miles' game could be going forward.
It's just confidence. He wants the ball. He wants to shoot it, not just in, you know, the first quarter from 18 feet, but you saw it in Boston with a minute to play in a tie game. And I'm just looking at his numbers right now, and after the Milwaukee game, when he was 1-for-3 and he had 5 points, I did an interview before the Jazz game with JMV. And, you know, it's kind of been a big topic on sports radio this season about Miles, kind of, you know, the first half to three quarters of the season, you could say it was a little up and down. He had two different injury situations. I think that hampered him a little bit. And then you combine the fact that Domas Sabonis was so good, and it just got fans thinking, you know, why can't you see more from Miles? So John asked me, you know, what kind of Miles are we going to see tonight? Are we going to see the 5-point Miles? Are we going to see, you know, 20-10? And, you know, I don't know what happened since then. And it's not to say he won't have an off game or foul trouble won't limit him, but I'm more impressed with the field goal attempts. And I don't know specifically if anything was done since the Milwaukee game to say, hey, Miles Turner has to shoot more than three times. But 10 for 14 against Utah, and that was the game he was pretty much the only Pacer that played well. 7 for 16 against Atlanta, 8 for 13 against Boston, 9 for 12 against Philadelphia, and the minutes aren't that different. You know, maybe an average over those five compared to maybe the 10 or 15 before, maybe five extra minutes per game. But the percentages, I mean, 71%, 44%, 62%, 75%, and he's hitting threes as well, and he's grabbing rebounds. So it's just basically everything you wanted from Miles, everything you thought you could get from Miles when you thought about this team in the offseason and they were moving on from Paul George. And, you know, I'll be honest, I kind of thought Miles was maybe going to try to step into that A role and Victor could be a complimentary piece. And maybe we've seen it's the other way around, but probably this team can be the best if those two are equals. And despite the last four games, you know, Victor's been a little up and down. Miles has been the difference maker. So it's been great to watch, and he's continued to play well defensively. And I guess to finish up this thought, the thing that I was most impressed with was listening to what Quinn Buckner had to say during the broadcast last night. And I guess I did not think of Joel Embiid this way, but two or three times he said, Joel Embiid does not want contact. He's not a physical player. He does not like to be played in a physical way. And it made sense because it was similar to what Nate told me before the game that, you know, we've got extra fouls. We've got extra big guys. And this was before he knew Domas was going to get injured. But he inferred that Al Jefferson was there. And if they had to throw him in, fine. And he knew he had Trevor Booker now as an extra big who he could throw at Embiid. So he wanted his bigs to be physical. If you got a foul, fine. Now, that doesn't mean he wanted Miles to get four quick fouls, and he got the foul trouble in the fourth quarter. But he wanted them to not think about not fouling. It was more important to be physical. And just think about that for a second. That's Miles Turner against Joel Embiid, who's thought as the biggest and baddest young big man in the league. And Miles is someone who, you know, the perception has been that he's more of a stretch four than an inside player. And two or three times, Quinn's saying, way to be physical, Joel doesn't want to play that way. And so I just think that pretty much sums up some of the transformation. It's still a learning process, and growth was the key word of the night. Sometimes Nate has some buzzwords, and it was growth when he was asked about team, about Miles, about different things, and then he used it again after the game. We've seen growth. Every game's not going to be as spectacular as that was, but knowing he can play physical against Joel Embiid like that, I would say, you know, there are very few bigs that he would feel like he cannot match up with in that way. I mean, I can only think of the ones that are maybe in their late 20s or early 30s that are used to playing that way. Steven Adams isn't maybe that old, but he's still a guy that I think has given Miles problems, and maybe I'd like to see them play again. Now, that probably won't happen until next year, but just the way he's been able to play inside, it's a great sign for not just the rest of this season, a playoff run, but also into next season. And I wanted to go back to you now. I've seen a lot of good things from this team on the road. What's been the feeling back home, and what have you noticed just being around the building, maybe just this week, even today when you went in? And also, I think you're maybe a little more active on social media than I am, although I had a few more tweets last night than normal because I was kind of fired up myself. So what's your general observation from everybody?
To have, you know, the excitement around the field house, to see the field house now regularly full, the attendance numbers on the back half of the season have been really, really good. The environment in there has always been good, but now you're seeing very few nights with empty seats, and that's a credit to the team winning. It's a credit to the staff that's upstairs above me right now as well. But I just think that vibe that's here right now is really good, and I think what you touched on is, you know, take time to reflect and enjoy this. Last season was a really tough one in that the Pacers had a pretty good team on paper and never really fully figured it out. The couple of times they had nice winning streaks, they followed them up a 7-game winning streak with a 6-game losing streak. And we don't know how this season's going to end. We don't know how next year is going to go. There might be some regression to the mean at some point. You know, they're, I think, 9-1 in games decided by 3 or less or something like that. That's tough to hold up throughout the course of an extended stretch of play. But I think it's just important to, if you're a fan, you know, these are the kind of years that are some of the most enjoyable, when you exceed expectations. You talked about in a previous podcast about how even the 56-26 team from 13-14, the way the back half of that season went, a lot of fans were more frustrated. And I think when you have years like this, to just kind of sit back and appreciate what's going on right now, regardless of how it ends. And we're all very hopeful that it ends in a way that, you know, makes the season once the playoffs come around. The fact that we're even talking about playoffs is a sure thing with a month left in the season is just a testament to how everything's gone this year. But, you know, there's a lot of good teams in the East. You hope it has a fulfilling ending, but I think the importance of, you know, sitting back and realizing what's going on right now is important. And, you know, to one other quick transition here I wanted to talk about, obviously Victor Oladipo has been such a big part of that, his on-the-floor play, but even just some of the off-the-court examples. We see how often, because between you and me, we're almost always grabbing him for a walk-off interview after a win, and how he spends time autographing things for the fans after the game when he could be heading to the locker room. Just the other day, he went over to the t-shirt cannon late in a game and grabbed a couple t-shirts out of it and were throwing them to the fans. But also, obviously, his play on the court has been so impressive. And I was looking at this stat a second ago. He not only leads the NBA in steals per game at 2.23, he is way ahead of Eric Bledsoe and Paul George, who are at 2.03. He, of course, now has 51 consecutive games with a steal. That's the 10th longest streak all time. And you haven't heard a lot of Defensive Player of the Year talk this year, just in general, on who it is. I think it's because no one has really stood out. The Warriors have slipped on defense this year. Kawhi Leonard hasn't been healthy. I think that's had a lot to do with it. But here's something that I was going through and found interesting. And I'm not saying Victor Oladipo is the Defensive Player of the Year, because steals are only a small part of what playing defense is. But I do think he deserves to be in the discussion, if for nothing else this. Not only is he leading the NBA in steals, but last year he would have been well ahead of Draymond Green if he can keep this pace at 2.23. He would have led the league in steals last year. He would have led the league in steals in 2015-2016 when Stephen Curry led the league in steals. And you have to go back to 14-15 when Kawhi Leonard had 2.31. Oladipo would have been second that year. So he not only is leading the league this year in steals, if he finishes at the mark he's at, he would have led the league in each of the last three seasons. And in two of the last three seasons, the person that's led the league in steals has Draymond Green and Kawhi Leonard ended up being Defensive Player of the Year. Not saying Victor Oladipo's Defensive Player of the Year, but if you lead the league in steals, you at least get in the conversation, and I think he deserves to be in the conversation. And I think there's been so much you know, talk, and very rightfully so, about what he's done on offense and carrying this team, and steals are not the whole defensive game, but I think just because some of the way he's surprised in so many different areas of his game, I honestly think that's not getting talked about enough.
Yeah, the streak is an easy one to talk about, but that is one play in any game. And, you know, there's the streak as well with steals or blocks. But I think I'll agree with you that it used to be, and we're talking a lot about Corey Joseph and him sort of locking down against opposing teams' best backcourt players in critical moments. But Victor has really accepted the challenge on that end of the floor. And I think that's been great to see. And it's really, you know, team defense. Utah, I continue to be impressed by what they are as a team and how they have played in the last, what is it now? Are they at 20 of 22? I mean, they basically have
something
lost like two games, and those are home to Portland and home to Houston. And other than that, I mean, I don't see them losing again. It's just crazy because they just blow people out. But the Pacers are up there with the Jazz over that stretch of time in terms of top defense in the NBA, and Boston is widely regarded as one of the best defensive teams, but if you look at them over the last couple of months, the Pacers' numbers are significantly better. So Victor is a big part of that, but, you know, it's just everybody gets their hands on the ball. Everybody just seems like they've really been, they understand what Dan Burke is trying to do defensively, and they have some deficiencies, but I think that they have good game plans as well. When they know there's a certain player that might be a mismatch, then they throw a wrinkle at them. So I do think the defensive part of it is something that maybe doesn't get enough credit, but you can't win that game in Philadelphia without not just above average defense. I mean, you had to play elite level defense. You had to force turnovers. Granted, Philly's a team that turns the ball over, but, with the way they were shooting, it just leads us maybe to our pick three, Pat, and we can talk about some other things before we wrap the podcast up. But our three most surprising wins of the season. And there's a lot of different ways you can go with that. But games that when the game ended, you're like, how did that just happen? And I feel like there are a number of those, especially a number of home games where I kind of just said, wow, impressive, surprising, but that is maybe not what I expected. And I don't think you could look at the box score from last night. We'll just make this the joint pick because I think you kind of agree with me. There are so many stats you could look at from last night, from the win against Philadelphia, and say, well, probably not one of your nights when Victor shoots the way he did. When Boyan, who had been, you know, I'm one of the best shooters in the NBA for 2 months, a month and a half, he was off. And nothing else was really standout except the grit, the grind, the defense, and the will to win. And that's a team that had not lost a game in Philadelphia in 2018. I just think that is one that I'm still shaking my head at, and one that just shows, moving forward, don't give me this tough schedule, tough team you're going to play, tough road game. It doesn't get any more tougher than that, and they won.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of this conversation started last night in a group chat that I have. Wheat Hotchkiss, who writes for Pacers.com, made the comment that he thought it was the most surprising win of the year. And my initial reaction was, okay, let's back away from this for a minute. It's a surprising win in that the 76ers are good and it was on the road. But, you know, as you have mentioned, the Pacers are good. They played well on the road this year. But then he started to bring up his point, and it's obviously dependent on how you define surprising. Look, you go into a building, as you mentioned to Miles, that they have not lost in 2018. Your best player goes 4-for-21. Your second leading scorer shoots one of his worst nights of the year. And you win a game under those circumstances where Philadelphia didn't really have any significant injuries. I mean, you put all of those, you know, applications with it, and it's remarkable. And it is, defense has a lot to do with it. The Pacers are the third best defensive team in the NBA since the All-Star break, which has now been about a month. And they are the best in the Eastern Conference over that time. And that's extremely surprising in its own if you would have looked at the beginning of the season when the Pacers were beating Brooklyn 140-131. And it was, oh my gosh, are they going to need 120 to win each night? And all of a sudden, this team has buckled down on the defensive end, and they're winning because of it. And the Pacers are winning games where they're not even scoring 100 now. And I think that's a really good sign when you get ready for playoff time, because typically the scores come down a little bit in the playoffs. So I from that context, yeah, the Philadelphia win is one of the best in the year in that regard. And I'll give credit to you because it takes a little bit of guts to your final. It wasn't a question to Miles. You just kind of said to him, and you can reword this if I am messing it up. You just kind of said to him, this team hadn't lost in this building since 2017. And when you do that, you're always worried, you know, is Miles going to go, is there a question in there?
What it could have gone poorly, correct.
But you got a great drop the mic from him.
Yeah. I was probably half a second away because he did pause enough to almost call myself out and take the mic back and say, I understand that's not a question, but how impressive is this with that in mind? Right. And then he gave me exactly what I was kind of looking for. It has been cool. I feel like we've had, three or four at least, pretty good drop the mic type of moments. And I think that's partially because of that whole unexpected success theme. And you know, I don't think this is a team that dwells on it, but they are reveling in it a little bit to kind of prove people wrong. And so, you know, you start by asking about the game and then an individual performance, and then maybe you bring a teammate into it and you just try to wrap it up with more of a general thought. And Miles, he did a good job with that. And I think the fans on Twitter certainly enjoyed that. And even our friends from The Ringer, who occasionally never give us any credit, gave Miles the quote of the night with that one as well. So I'm not an idiot. I don't try to throw the talk about, but every once in a while I'll just kind of throw a statement. And I understand maybe a journalism professor might not like the question in that way, but sometimes I do feel like I'm having a conversation with someone. And if I have a conversation with you, I might not always ask you a direct question. I'm just going to throw something out there. And so, and you know what? That Miles said something else I did want to share, and I think if you read Clifton Brown's article in the Indianapolis Star, sidetracking from our pick three here, but I think there was a little bit of bad blood, and I think that's okay. I thought the Pacers were composed, but I think they were a little annoyed by the Sixers, even though for some reason it's because of Lance Stephenson, everyone seems to think like the Pacers are the dirty team. And you know what? Obviously, we're going to be biased in that discussion. But Miles was asked about Joel Embiid after the game, and he said, "You know, I love going against them. It's a great, you know, great competition. But I hope he's listening, dude. Dude, got to stop flopping, man. It's getting annoying." And that, the only thing I thought about the walk-off interview is, oh man, I wish I could have gotten the Joel Embiid question on to see if he would have in that forum said it, because it probably didn't spread as much as maybe it could have when he said it. But you know, fun night. I like the edge that this team has right now, and we'll share the pick three. Surprising because of so many factors that you could look at the box score after that game and say, and even the circumstances, and say it's a win. What's another one from this season as we look back?
Before I go to that really quickly, one thing I was looking at is Basketball Reference's playoff odds, which now actually have the Pacers at 100%, which means they're closer to 100 than 99.9. So obviously there's not a 100% chance they make it, but that's how close the Pacers are with their magic number at 6, with them and Detroit still having 29 to play. They're projecting Cleveland at 46.7 wins in third. They're projecting the Pacers at 46.5 wins. Obviously, I know you can't have point wins. This is just saying the average among all the simulations they run. They've got the Pacers at 46.5, Philadelphia at 46.5, Washington at 45.4. Where I'm going with this is right now Basketball Reference has the Pacers as the 4, the Sixers at the 5, and I think anybody who watched that game last night would agree that would be a very entertaining playoff series, and one that probably would go 6 or 7 games and be really entertaining if that is the matchup that happens. We'll see if those projected standings end up playing out. But the Pacers getting the tie break against Philly as well, that's big. They got it against Milwaukee a week and a half ago. My pick for this is going to go back early in the season. And again, the definition of surprising here is we can kind of change it as we're going. It's the win over Cleveland, 124-107. It was game number 8 or 9 for the Pacers on the year. And, you know, Cleveland is coming off going to the NBA Finals. The previous season, they won the NBA Finals. They had started the year slow, but we still didn't really know what the Pacers were. The Pacers were 4-4 at that point. They had the nice San Antonio win. They'd beaten Sacramento. But outside of San Antonio, it's still so early in the season, they didn't have a whole lot to hang their hat on. And this was a game, especially in Cleveland, which I'm trying to remember now, thinking back to it, there was some wild stat about the last time the Pacers won a regular season game against a LeBron James Cavs-led team in the regular season. And it obviously happened then, and the Pacers beat them twice here as well. But not just winning that game, but in the way they won that game. Dominant. Fans leaving the queue with like 7 or 8 minutes left. It was a positively jarring scene. And when I think back to, you know, sometimes I've been really surprised walking out of the studio, pleasantly surprised, because there were so many times last year when the Pacers went 13-28 on the road where I kept leaving the studio going, man, they let another opportunity slip. And I've just thought about how few times that's really happened this year. And walking out of that studio, I remember being about as surprised at any result that I have been in my 4 years covering this team. So that Cleveland win at the beginning of the year stands out to me in large part just because of the timing of it. We really didn't know what we had at the time. And it certainly was a good moment for Pacers fans and probably some foreshadowing of what the season was going to be ahead.
It is amazing how the Cleveland games tend to stand out, and they would be easy for me to pick as well, really both of the other ones, because the one in December when the Pacers beat the Cavs inside Bankers Life Fieldhouse, they were on, I believe, a 13-game winning streak. So they were red hot, and the Pacers came from behind and got that win. And then back in January, they were scuffling. It was a Cavs team that, you know, looked like they needed to have the team meeting, and LeBron, I remember, got to Bankers Life Fieldhouse. I think he took a cab over or got a ride over before the team bus and was practicing shooting on his own in the practice court. And once I heard that, I said, oh, that's a bad sign. And the Pacers had just lost to Miami at home, and they won that game. But I'm gonna go with the win at San Antonio, and it kind of is similar to the win at Philadelphia in that you were coming off, you know, the end of a road trip. Now, at San Antonio, at that point, it was 2-2. And Nate really wanted to have a 3-2 road trip. And it started well at Phoenix, at Utah. Then you lost at Portland and at LA. And anytime you lose a game at LA and you think you should win, you just kind of immediately start thinking, okay, maybe this team isn't that good. And I mean, when was the last time the Pacers had swept the Spurs? And then looking at the box score, it was similar to last night. The Pacers shot 4 for 19 from three. And you just think, that nothing is going to match up. Miles Turner was not available to play in that game. Nobody even had over 20 points. It wasn't, an epic Victor Oladipo game. He was 8 for 15. But the Pacers won at San Antonio. And we're seeing the Spurs aren't maybe the same Spurs team that they've been. But the way that was one of those team effort type of games. Looking at the box score, they had 8 players who had at least 9 points. Nobody had more than 19. Corey Joseph was huge. But I got on the plane that night and I'm thinking, man, maybe this team can go into San Antonio and win and not play their best game, but they did it with defense. And that's what we've seen the last 2 months. It's been defense. So I think that was a really important win. You get enough of these wins that no one thinks you can win, and against teams that are, you know, you have a lot of respect for, not just the players, but the coaching staff. And you start to believe you can do it any night. And that's, I think, the belief that they had at Boston and Philadelphia. And I did say last week, I thought they could go 2-2 this week at minimum. Now they go 2-2. But I see no reason why they can't win at home against Toronto and why they can't win at Washington. I thought that Philly game was going to be the toughest of the four, to be honest with you. And they got it. So solid pick three. And maybe there will be another. Actually, I would say maybe none of the remaining games would fall under the surprising category or fit under there, because for now, they're a 40-28 team. They're 12 games over 500. They're the third best team in the East. Unless you go beat Golden State at full strength, none of the other games on the rest of the schedule would I be surprised if the Pacers win.
No, I think that's the great part of how this season has gone, in that they're getting less surprising even as the big wins are coming into March and into April. And I thought Mark Monteith brought up an interesting point. Having your toughest portion of the schedule be at the end like the Pacers do, it all evens out. Everybody plays a similar schedule. And for the Pacers, though, what he was hypothesizing is that it could, you know, put them in a good mind frame as they get ready for the playoffs. Mindset as they get ready for the playoffs. Philadelphia is going to be playing a lot of easier teams. The Pacers, while they're almost assuredly in at this point, are playing teams that they're going to be playing in the playoffs right now. And just the way the schedule plays out, you looked at it at the beginning of the season, you said, well, they better take care of business early on because this last stretch is brutal, especially now when you consider that New Orleans is involved in it because of the rain out there. But you might think that this might actually be a blessing in disguise, in that when the Pacers take on their first-round opponent, whether it's at Bankers Life Fieldhouse or on the road on Saturday or Sunday, April 15th, 16th, whatever that date ends up being, they're going to essentially have been in playoff mode, I think at least, for about a month's time. And I don't know how significant that effect is. Like, a lot of teams, I think, can just turn it on and be ready like that. But I think if you're a Pacers fan, that's at least maybe a storyline to watch once we get around playoff time. In college basketball, a lot of times you'll see coaches, they'll say, we want to get a really hard schedule because it'll prepare us for tournament time. Maybe you see the same thing happen for the Pacers.
I think that's a good point. And the one thing I do think that also helps is, despite the difficult schedule, only one more back-to-back. And I think Philadelphia still has 4 more sets of back-to-backs. And while you're playing tougher teams, by not having those back-to-backs or 4 and 5s, or you don't have 4 and 5s as much anymore. I don't even know. Maybe they just have 1 this season, or did not have any. But 3 and 4 definitely, and 4 and 6 maybe. Either way, I think that the coaching staff is aware of the need to be fresh, but also not to let up in games, because then you can create bad habits. So just an example, in Philadelphia, they had a good practice on Monday afternoon, and almost always they have a shoot around on the road before a game, as long as they didn't have a game the night before. And so When Nate was addressing the team at practice on Monday, the goal was to have a really good practice. It would be a longer practice because you're going to do practice things, and then you're going to do sort of game plan, plays, prep for that opponent, and then no shoot-around the next morning. So you have to trust your team that they are going to know they're going to have no shoot-around, and they don't take advantage of that opportunity the night before to, you know, stay out all night. But then you're valuing the rest. You're saying it's okay, sleep in, be rested, be ready, come to the arena ready to go. That's more important than getting you up, bringing you to the arena, getting on a bus, doing a shoot-around, and then not. And it, you know, I don't know that that played a factor in it, but they're going to do little things moving forward to make sure guys have their legs. It helps that they have health. The Domas Sabonis situation is certainly one to track. Just for those listening, if they're listening on Thursday, we do not know anything new about that. But it's good they have Trevor Booker. And so I just think the schedule is going to make this team focused, but the coaches are going to make them not tired. And I think that's important moving forward, because there are going to be some teams that do get a week off or 2 weeks off once they say, okay, you could even say Boston right now. They could just say, we're going to be the two seed. We're not going to catch Toronto. I don't think Cleveland's going to catch us. They're going to maybe rest and get Kyrie Irving healthy. You do worry, though, if you do that for too long, can you just flip the switch and be back on? I think the Pacers will probably be in the position where you'd like them to maybe the last week, maybe that Charlotte game doesn't matter, and you can take one of those and rest. But there will not be significant rest, and I think that's okay.
You know, well said. And, you know, one thing I wanted to hit on, I don't want to talk about what the Pacers are doing right now for 40 minutes and not bring up this. And I think sometimes these podcasts can tend to get a little bit stream of consciousness, but that's just personally, I like that style of format where it's not necessarily segmented and regimented and all that. And I don't think we can talk for 40 minutes without at least acknowledging, and we have done this, just not directly, what Nate McMillan is doing. And to me, that's another storyline that's not gotten covered enough. You have a team that came into this season that was projected to win either 31 or 32 games, and it's 40-28, and you don't get there without the coach being a huge part of that. And I look at last night as a great example. I was actually having this discussion with a couple Pacers.com people, and when Miles got his fifth, they brought in Al, and one of the other guys on Pacers.com said they should play Trevor Booker on Embiid. And I said, no, Al's bigger, he's taller, he's stronger. Embiid is a physical force in the post. I think Al's the right call. Well, Nate went with Al. After about 2 minutes, Embiid got to the lane really easily once off a screen. He decided to go to Booker, and Booker held him 1 of 3. The Pacers went outscored the Sixers 5-2. It was just a two-minute stretch, but it was a huge two-minute stretch in that the Sixers were coming back. They were on a big run, and a lot of times coaches are a little reluctant to make quick changes in that regard. They believe in their decision, and 2 minutes of Al Jefferson maybe isn't a big enough example to pull him. Nate was proactive in that regard, and Booker came in, and Embiid all of a sudden immediately had a tougher path to the rim, a tougher path to scoring, and it's just one example, but I know I am totally finding agreement with you here, but I think important to discuss what Nate is doing as well, because to me that's been an overlooked part of this season.
He's pushed all the right buttons. I've said numerous times this year that I've been impressed with fourth quarter rotations and not being so regimented in that this guy comes in at this time, this guy comes in at this time, this group plays together. Different games have called for different situations. When Darren Collison was healthy, sometimes he finished the game. Sometimes it was Corey Joseph. If you needed offense or if you needed defense, would depend. Some games, if Sabonis was just playing lights out, Miles Turner, one of your franchise cornerstones, sometimes has been on the bench late. And that's just Nate going with all of the experience that he has, getting a feel of the situation. And that's exactly what he did last night with Trevor Booker. And I guess you're preaching to the choir with the coaches, yeah, and credit to them. And I'll just say, though, that the players are helping in this matter for this reason. Just like media people and trainers and players can get worn down by a long season, it's hard on the coaches as well. You know, they've got to watch film and prep and all of these things. And And I know last year there was some satisfaction and relief in that last week of the season when the Pacers finally clinched and solidified a playoff spot. But that was because, I mean, you're always happy about that. But I think it was such a struggle just to kind of get a handle of that team. They weren't always happy. And Dan Burke's the perfect person. A few times in interviews and also in practice, I've heard him say to the guys, with the way you guys play and the effort that you bring, you can do this, this, and this. And then he'll say, you know, halftime interviews used to be, he's been, the best of Dan Burke won't be as entertaining this year because there hasn't been as much to be negative about. He's been,
that's a good thing.
I mean, there are some games, even when the Pacers are down and I'm like, oh, Dan's going to really light into him. He doesn't have a reason to be angry because he knows they'll come back and bring it in the second half, or he's not faulting the effort. And so the players are helping the coaches are putting the players in the right situation, and everything just fits together. And it is kind of a joy to see and to witness and, you know, to be honest, to be a part of, you know, being with this team on the plane in the hotel. It's one of those seasons that I don't think I'll ever forget. And, you know, at this point, you just hope it doesn't end anytime soon.
I think that's really well summed up and probably a good way to put a bow on this one. The Pacers coming up have the Toronto Raptors at home. That is a 7 o'clock tip, 6:30 with Jeremiah Johnson on Fox Sports Indiana, 6:30 with me on the radio side for pregame. Pacers.com/tickets is how you can be there. Saturday at Washington, 7 o'clock there as well, so normal half hour before the game. And then the Pacers have three of their next four at home, so a few chances to catch the Pacers before the end of March at Bankers Life Fieldhouse. You summed up everything really well, I thought, in those last comments, but anything final from you before we let you go?
I don't know, just get out and enjoy this team. I can remember last year a late season game against Toronto was maybe the best atmosphere in the regular season, and there have been a number of awesome atmospheres at Bankers Life Fieldhouse this season, but I think Thursday night, if you're listening to this prior to that game, you've got a Raptors team that really, I think, you'd have to say is the favorite in the Eastern Conference right now. I don't really want to hear about Cleveland right now. Sure, they can flip the switch and they can maybe turn it on. And they have LeBron. Boston has a number of injuries, and the Pacers, it's okay to be, it's okay to stay under the radar, but I would say you've got the two maybe teams with the best chemistry right now in the Eastern Conference in Toronto and the Pacers. And everything you read about Toronto is how well they get along. They fall behind, they come back. They got their 50th win last night. That's a big deal. The Pacers, it was a big deal to get win number 40 already. I just think it's going to be a great atmosphere, and I'm ready to go to the game right now. So get out, enjoy. If you can't be out there, watch us on TV, listen on the radio, and we'll try to keep the podcast coming as well.
He's Jeremiah Johnson. I'm Pat Boylan. We'll probably talk to you either on Tuesday or Thursday next week, either after that Lakers or Pelicans game next week. Pacers and Raptors Thursday at 7 o'clock. For Jeremiah Johnson, I'm Pat Boylan. We'll talk to you next week on the Sideline Guys podcast.